Fourth and final hour here on 102.5 The Game. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick here, Bridgestone Arena, Jack Daniels Barrel House. This is going to be the site tonight for the Predators and the Sharks. Nashville coming in this contest, 81 points, winners of their last two. Sharks have also been winning of late, too. They come in with 74 points over in the Pacific Division. To help us talk about tonight's opponent, Kevin Kurz with The Athletic. He's the Sharks reporter for them. Kevin, how you doing?
Good. How are you guys doing?
Thanks for joining us. Well, it looks like both teams have been winning of late. What's been going on with the Sharks? Will they put together a little winning streak here of late?
Yeah, well, you know, the biggest issue with the Sharks up until recently was they were having real trouble scoring five-on-five goals. The offense just wasn't there, but lately it has been. And actually, it's been kind of a reverse. The power play has gone dry, and the Sharks' five-on-five scoring has really taken off. And actually, their last 21 goals have all come even strength, and they're getting it up and down the lineup. You know, they've won five of their last six games, and at least 13 different guys have at least one goal. So that's been the biggest key. And also Martin Jones. It really still starts in net with this team. And Martin Jones was really struggling going into the All-Star break. He was dealing with an injury, tried playing through it. Finally was shut down for the four games before the All-Star break. And since then, he's been the guy that I think Sharks fans are used to seeing. So, you know, those two things are that's a pretty good recipe for winning games, and that's what they've been doing lately.
What's the mindset in Northern California about this division? Is because Vegas has been in control for so long, does everybody just say, nah, Golden Knights are going to win it, everybody else is playing for that second and third spot? Or does San Jose believe down the stretch run of this regular season they can actually win a division title?
You know what? I don't think that's the focus right now. And you look at this team, they lost Joe Thornton, you know, future Hall of Famer. He was their second leading scorer at the time he came out of the lineup. And, you know, right away, I think the mindset changed, at least among the fans, to, you know, let's just try to get into the playoffs here. This is a tough division because you obviously have Vegas well out in front, but you have the Anaheim Ducks, the Calgary Flames, the LA Kings. You know, these teams are all winning games still. So, you know, I think that's the focus. I don't think anyone realistically thinks that the Sharks will catch Vegas right now. I think they just want to make sure they get in the playoffs. And, you know, lately that's been the case. I think they're looking more behind them at the other teams. You know, at least that's what I'm doing. Anyway, I'm looking at the teams behind them to see if they can stay in front of them rather than can they chase down Vegas, because, you know, the Golden Knights, it sure seems like they're the real deal here. They're not going away. And every time you think that maybe they're starting to slide, they turn around and they, you know, win three or four more games in a row. So, I think right now it's just getting the playoffs. And, you know, even if you go back 2 years ago, the Sharks were only the third seed in the division when they made the run of the Stanley Cup Finals. So
I guess the reason I bring it up, Kevin, is just their dominance at home this year. I mean, they have been the story. I mean, 23 wins at home. And, you know, I think we all chuckled. The Las Vegas Flu for the opposition. There's a lot of distractions on the Vegas Strip. But, you know, it's obviously played out in their inaugural season. And it just seems like a place probably nobody wants to go play at, you know, if they've got home ice advantage.
Yeah, I would think that's the case. So, you know, you might not have – there might not be any way to avoid that now at this point. But, you know, at the same time, there's a lot of players on that team that don't have a whole lot of playoff experience. So if that's the case, I think, you know, if the Sharks did face them in the playoffs, I think they'd be – I still think they'd be a pretty confident group.
What do you think as the trading deadline is approaching on Monday? What do you think is going to be the level of activity, or how active – I'll phrase it that way – how active do you believe the Sharks will be, or do you think they're just going to stand pat?
I don't think they're going to do much. You know, they just made a minor trade for Eric Fair to center their fourth line. They basically gave up nothing to get him, so to me it was a pretty good move by the Sharks to go out and get a bigger body. But I don't think they're really in a position to be major players in terms of the big name guys that might be rentals. And Doug Wilson has already said many times that he's not going to give up one of his young assets or one of his young players in order just to get a rental player. And I believe him 100% that that's the case. You know, this team's focus, I think, from the front office standpoint is, let's see what this current group can do, and then they'll go into the offseason with a whole lot of cap space, and I think they're going to be major players at that point. But, you know, in terms of the trade deadline, I really would be surprised if they did anything too notable. I think this team could use another scoring winger, frankly. But it's not going to be anywhere like anybody like Rick Nash or Evander Kane or anybody like that. I just don't think they're in a position to go out and make a move like that because, you know, the system's not very deep. I think they're a little thin on in the minor leagues. And if you look at the draft, they don't have a second or third round pick in 2018. So, again, it's a lack of assets for me that probably means that they're not going to do a whole lot before Monday.
They've won, Kevin, four of their last five road games and not against easy opponents. They went into St. Louis on Tuesday and beat the Blues. They went into Anaheim and beat the Ducks, beat Carolina and Columbus. Their only hiccup, believe it or not, was at Colorado. What? And this team has won.
That's a tough place to win these days.
Well, these days, mm-hmm. But, you know, I'm not sure of the time frame. If that was with Nathan MacKinnon in or out, my guess was he was probably out of the lineup by then. They've won 16 games this year. Why have they been successful on the road?
You know what? That's a good question. I mean, they've a couple of years ago, they were really good on the road, and they had trouble winning at home. And again, this is back in 2016 when they made the run in the Stanley Cup final. And then when the playoffs hit, they were better at home than they were on the road. So I don't know. It's tough to figure out with this group. I think that they're a pretty tight-knit group. I think they like it. They do enjoy one another's company. I think that sort of thing helps on the road, too. When you're away from your families and everything, you want to feel like you kind of have a family in the dressing room. And that's been a big part of this team's success, I think, is the culture that Pete DeBoer has built since he's come in here a couple of years ago. So, other than that, it's hard to say because they do have, Mark Edward Vlasic and Justin Braun is their shutdown pair. That's the pair they try to get out against the other team's top line as much as possible. And obviously you don't get to do that as much on the road, but I don't know if you can explain it. It's just one of those things.
Kevin Kerr is on the line with us, The Athletic. He's the Sharks reporter. A couple of years ago, unfortunately, the Predators lost in Game 7 in San Jose to the Sharks. That Sharks team would go on all the way to the Stanley Cup final and lose to the Penguins. Last year, they were out in the first round to Edmonton. When you look up and down their roster, Kevin, it looks a lot of familiar faces and names that we saw even 2 years ago when the Predators faced them in that second round. But when you look at the last 2 years of the Sharks and this year's team, where does this year's team stack up to the 2015 and the 2016 seasons? Are they is this team better? Or let's just start with, I guess, last year. How does this team look to you right now?
Well, if you go back to last year when they went into the playoffs, they really had some tough injuries they were dealing with. You know, Joe Thornton was playing through the torn MCL and ACL, and obviously he was not anywhere near 100% in that Edmonton series. Logan Couture in Nashville, if you remember last March, got hit with a puck in the face and basically rearranged his whole mouth. He had to do a whole lot of extensive dental surgery in the offseason, and so I don't think he was quite right either. So those injuries didn't help them in that playoff series against the Oilers, certainly. But then at the same time, I think they were also starting to feel the wear and tear of the season because they did have that long season in 2016. They had a number of guys in the World Cup, and then there was the condensed schedule. And I think that did catch up with them at the end of last season. So, you know, if you take a look at this year's team, we'll see if Joe Thornton comes back. You know, Doug Wilson said that he does expect him back, but he won't guarantee that he'll be back, so that there's still some ambiguity there. But I think the biggest reason for hope when you look at the current team is that some of the younger players have taken that next step, and that's Chris Tierney, Jonas Donskoy, Timo Meier, Kevin LeBanc, Joachim Ryan on the blue line. They do have some contributors that are younger players that could potentially be the next core of this team, and Logan Couture is still a pretty young guy himself. So it's a little bit different in that regard because they are relying on those younger guys to put the puck in the net. And lately that's been happening. So, if that continues, we'll see. I don't quite see them right now as a team that stacks up amongst the Western Conference's best. If the playoffs started tomorrow, could I see them winning a playoff series? I could, but I don't quite see Stanley Cup contender with this group right now.
Kevin, you mentioned, I think, an important thing to keep in the back of your mind if you're a Predator fan or really anybody who's a hockey fan, and that is all of the cap space that the Sharks have accumulated going forward here. And that we just had a discussion the other day about John Tavares in light of, hey, if you're not really wanting to jump in there and pay a high price for a rental player, and maybe you are looking long term, do you want to roll the dice and hope that a guy like Tavares hits the market? I have to believe the Sharks have him in the back of their mind with all the money they have. They have the package to maybe present to him if he hits the free agent market.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt. I mean, if John Tavares is an unrestricted free agent, I think the Sharks will be all over that. And that's why I think if you look at this year's team, it could almost be a little bit of a transitional year because they didn't do anything in the offseason to try to replace Patrick Marleau's offense. They did hope that some of these younger guys would develop, and in a lot of cases that's happened. And, you know, because they're not in the market for a rental player and because they're not going to go out and spend a whole lot of money now to jeopardize their cap space in the summer, it's fairly obvious that that's their plan. They want to spend money in the offseason, and they want to, you know, add some pieces via free agency around some of these younger guys that have developed their games here over the last several months. So, you know, the thing about the Sharks, too, you have to remember is in the market they're in, they're not really in a position to miss the playoffs for a whole bunch of years and then rebuild that way. They've got to stay competitive just to stay relevant in the Bay Area sports scene and to keep their fans coming on a game-to-game basis. So in that sense, it's been successful because they are still in the mix this year. But I can't help but think that this year kind of was viewed as a little bit of a transitional year all along because they do have that cap space. They've kept that cap space, and they're not going to use it, I don't think, before the summer.
Kevin, for more of a casual fan, this question is maybe directed for people like that. But Brent Burns is such a unique player, and we don't get a chance to see him that often. Of course, this year has been interesting. I couldn't believe the stats. It was such an oddity because he's one of the highest volume shooters you're going to find, but he had no goals until almost Thanksgiving or November 24th, something like that. Now the numbers are coming around for him. He's got 50 points. Must be nice to have 10 goals and 50 points when he didn't score a goal for the first, 20 games or so. But he's such a unique player. He really is one of a kind.
Yeah, and, you know, it definitely was amazing that he didn't have any goals until November. I think his first goal was Black Friday in Vegas, so it was November 25th or whatever it was. But, you know, I think he was taking more low-percentage shots back then, and the power play wasn't very good early on in the season, so that hurt him. But, yeah, he is a unique player, that's for sure. And, you know, he creates so much offense from the back end, and certainly that's something the Sharks need while they have guys like Thornton out and Thomas Hertl missed the last three games as well. So he'll be back in tonight. But, yeah, you know, Brent Burns has had a little bit of an odd season because, you know, his defensive game hasn't been quite as strong as it was last year. You know, when he won the Norris Trophy, there's usually two or three times a game where you're just kind of asking yourself, well, where the heck is he going on that play? And too many times this year, I think it's cost the Sharks on the defensive end, and they've given up goals because of it. Now, we haven't seen that as much lately. I think he's been better. He's also dealing with some sort of injury that brought him out of a game, and I think that might have hindered his effectiveness a little bit. But, you know, he is one of a kind in terms of creating offense from the back end, and he's so dangerous on the power play that the Sharks are just going to they'll live with the mistakes he makes defensively just because he's such a big part of creating offense.
Last thing for you, a guy that's really emerged this year is Aaron Dell, and I believe he is starting tonight. And statistically, right, he's really gotten it done, and it's one of those deals where he's done so well, he might be attractive as kind of like Martin Jones was. He as a backup, the Sharks said, I think that guy can start, and they signed Martin Jones, and he's the starter. Is Dell sort of hitting that category?
Yeah, you know, he's definitely been a solid backup. His numbers were great, and then Martin Jones went hurt and he started really for the first time in his NHL career a stretch of games in a row. It didn't go quite as well for him as it had when he was just kind of a spot starter. But regardless, he almost always gives the team some solid minutes. And I know his name has been floated out there in terms of maybe he's one of the Sharks tradable assets that could bring back some sort of floor, but I still think the Sharks hold on to him here post deadline. I think the preference is to sign him to an extension contract extension in the offseason, but There hasn't been much of a letdown between his game and Martin Jones, and frankly, he was better than Jones there for a good portion, I want to say about 6 weeks in December and January when Jones was fighting through whatever injury he had. So, he's given the team solid minutes. I think they're confident in front of him, and this is certainly a big test for him tonight because I think the Sharks look at this team as clearly the Nashville Predators are a contender once again, and they want to see how they measure up with them, and they're going to throw Dell in there to see how he does too.
Should be a good one. Not the last time these two teams will meet. They'll meet again here in Nashville in late March, but it should be a good one here tonight. Kevin, thanks so much for the visit. We look forward to it as always, and we'll talk to you down the road.
Yep, anytime. Thanks, guys.
Kevin Kurz, the Athletic Sharks reporter. Sharks and Preds tonight, 7 o'clock, pregame at 6. We'll come back with more, including your chance to win some tickets. You might want to jump in there right now at 737-1025. We'll tell you how you can win some really cool tickets on the other side. You're listening to 102.5 The Game. I asked you to respond. I told you to get in there. I didn't tell you why. I said if you wanted to win some really cool tickets, you should jump in there. You've responded. The lines are loaded. They loaded up quickly. And now you're going to get an opportunity to win tickets before you can even buy them. They're not even on sale yet. Tickets go on sale Friday at noon. Chris Young in concert along with special guests Kane Brown and Morgan Evans right here at Bridgestone Arena on Saturday, September 22nd. Chris Young tickets. But first, to go to that cool show, you have to answer this trivia question from Willie.
All right. This is going to be a little tricky one here. I'm going to see who knows a little bit about NHL expansion.
Oh.
NHL expansion.
Okay.
As we know, the Predators came in to the league 1998-99. That was their first season. There were a handful of other teams that came in on the previous wave of expansion. As a lot of you know, the four expansion teams that came in relatively at the same time, they're kind of like the relatives, right, would be the Predators.
Columbus.
Atlanta, who didn't last, and, of course, Minnesota. Those are the four.
Did not last again, by the way. They're a two-time loser.
Yeah, two-time loser. The Sharks were in the previous wave of expansion. So the question is, what was the first year of the San Jose Sharks? What year did they play their first game?
The inaugural season of the San Jose Sharks.
Yeah.
Let's go to Lee in Antioch. Lee, do you know the answer?
Man, I'm going to guess and say 92.
1992. That is incorrect. Thank you, Lee.
Thank you for trying.
That opens up one line, 737-1025. How about Scott? Scott, do you know the inaugural season of the Sharks?
I've got to guess,
95. 1995.
Thank you, Scott. Another line available, 737-1025. Mike, the first season of the Sharks was?
1991.
1991. The music would indicate that that is correct.
Let's celebrate.
It's time to celebrate with Cool in the Gang.
1991. Mike, we're going to put you on hold. You can celebrate. Give them your info, your digits, and you'll be here at Bridgestone Arena in
now,
September on a Saturday night to see Chris Young.
As we know, the Sharks play in a really good atmosphere, and it's been called a couple of different things. The Shark Tank is really the lingo, but it's called the SAP Center right now. Their original home was not ready. Do you know the name of their first building?
Ooh.
Pete Weber's got some fun stories about this place.
He's got his hand raised.
This is a real intimidating sounding place, okay?
Hashtag sarcasm.
It was called the Cow Palace.
Oh, Yeah.
All right.
You want some of us?
Where are we going to play?
Well, you'll have to beat us at the Cow Palace.
See if you can come into the Cow Palace and beat us.
Where was that?
Just outside of San Francisco.
In Sacramento?
Daly City. Daly City, California, in the Bay Area, just outside San Fran, but not. And I've driven by it before. I've never been in there. Didn't look all that great.
No?
Yeah.
Well, but that was how long ago? That's almost 30 years ago.
Yeah. So they moved into the Shark Tank in 93, 94. Yeah. The Cow Palace. Like, even when it was new, we're going to build this building. It's going to be a great place. We're going to have a lot of events. You know, good place to hold concerts and sporting events. What are you going to call it? The Cow Palace? Who named it that?
Here's a little background. Thanks for asking. The idea for the arena was
added perspective on the Cow Palace.
Give us some added perspective.
Okay. According to Wikipedia, the idea for the arena was inspired by the popularity of the livestock pavilion at the 1915 Panama Pacific International Exposition. A local newspaper asked as early as May 1935, why when people are starving should money be spent over a palace for cows? Headline writer turned the phrase around, thus, Cow Palace.
It must be true. Wikipedia said it. It must be true.
Oh, man. That is nuts.
I'm sure Pete Weber, if he's already left, he stopped by and said hello. If he was here, he would jump on the mic and have a Cow Palace story, for sure.
Oh, I'm sure.
I'm sure Terry Crisp has a Cow Palace story.
So that wave of expansion, the Sharks came in, and like the Predators, they were a little bit ahead of the other teams that came in just after them, the Ducks and the
Panthers.
Was it Tampa
right around there?
Tampa. Oh, yeah. Tampa might have been in the same time. I wonder if they came in the same year. Let's take a look. Because those were the four. Tampa, I do think, was before the Ducks and the Sharks.
Yeah.
The Ducks and the Panthers came in a little bit after that.
Tampa was playing their first year at that beautiful palace, the home of the Rays.
Yeah. Yes. In fact, they played in a building not even there the first year. The first year they were.
I thought they played there the first year.
No, not the first year. Let's take a look at the history of the Lightning. We need Terry Crisp over here for that one.
He would know all about it.
But they played in a different place. It was like a civic center of some sort. It was not ideal at all.
Which has been kind of the theme in Tampa.
Yeah.
Well, at least with the baseball team.
The Thunderdome was gigantic. You know, I did go to – I went to a game in the Thunderdome. When I was playing in the minors, we went over there and watched the game. And that at least had some – it was interesting because if you've got a great crowd in there, you have 28,000 people in there.
Yeah.
Which, even though we sat way up at the top, it was like $5 tickets. We were like, oh, minor league baseball salary? We're in. That's perfect. So they came in 1992. So they came in the next year. So the Sharks were in, then the Lightning, the Ducks were the next year. And I think the Panthers came in same year as the Ducks. So the first year, what was the name of the building?
Willie, in the early 90s, I saw Indians, like especially like a Friday night fireworks doubleheader against the A's back when, you know, the Bash Brothers and the A's were good. I'd go to an Indians game at Municipal Stadium. There'd be 75,000 people at a baseball game. If you've never attended a baseball game with 75,000 people, which, you know, is not possible today because of the way they construct stadiums for good reason, that, you know, they were playing at a football field. It's a pretty cool atmosphere. Now, you're way out in the outfield, it's home plate is miles away. When you have 75,000 people gathered to watch a baseball game, it can be a really cool atmosphere.
It was awesome. I did it. I went to, by the way, it was Expo Hall. 11,000 seats was the first home of the Tampa Bay Lightning. And they just had a big anniversary, 25 years or 35 years? What's the math? 92 to 2017? Yeah, 25-year anniversary. And Crispy was down there. Jerry Helper used to work. So they went down there. They had – the celebration in the building, in the fairgrounds building, where they first played the game. 11,000 seats before they moved into the big one. But getting back to cavernous places, I went to a series they used to call it the mistake on the lake, Municipal Stadium in Cleveland. It's like 80,000 seats. 4th of July, one of those crowds you're talking about, like 70,000. It was awesome. Went to another game in the same series the next night or the night before. I can't remember. And it was like 10,000, 12,000. Yeah. And so it was just cavernous. And all that to say, when we start talking about how hard it is to fill seats, we saw baseball go in that direction right around that time. And the Jake was built. We don't need a 70,000 seat. Let's go 40,000. That's what a lot of the baseball stadiums have done.
Well, Camden was the first, and then you had the Jake, and then that started kind of the wave.
But there used to be a lot of dual-purpose stadiums. Remember all those donuts like Atlanta and Philadelphia and Pittsburgh?
Oh, yeah.
And those places would seat 55 or 60,000 people for baseball, and night in and night out, that's not a great atmosphere, because even if you have a good crowd of 30,000, it doesn't look full. So baseball got smart. I do wonder if football eventually will go that route. Someday, when the next wave of stadiums are built, do they decide to go smaller? Just because it's hard to fill an 80,000-seat stadium these days. It's hard to fill a 70,000-seat stadium.
Yep. Let's go to Nate down in the Borough. Nate, what's up?
Hey, guys. So I was wondering, how do y'all think the team is going to attack this game tonight? It's not like we haven't faced them already, but it's not like we have played them recently. We faced them back in November, and we lost 1-4 at their place. Are we looking for revenge? Are we taking it? I'm sure they're going to say we're just taking it as another game, but, I mean, how do y'all think they're actually attacking this game?
It is interesting you mentioned that game. November 1st is when they last saw the Sharks. They lost 4-1, and that put the record at the time to 5-5-1. So this team, since that night, really hit their stride, right? They're 36-14-9. They were 5-5-1. So since then, they've gone 31-9-8. I think they were just, and in fact, Peter Laviolette was asked about that this morning. He said, you know, they've really just come together. They thought they were close at that time. It wasn't long after that that they traded for Kyle Turris. So they are a different team. And I think the Sharks are playing some of their best hockey of the year. I don't think there's any, in an 82-game season, Darren, you might disagree. Rarely do you get into this, hey, we owe them one, there's revenge, that kind of thing. I think it's much more focus on the task at hand, get back to playing your style. Now, I do think a guy like Brent Burns does make you change a little bit. You have to be aware. He's such a unique player for a defenseman. He's technically a defenseman, but he is a guy that is, at times, you're wondering, hey, is this guy really a forward? What are they doing here? Because
he
roves everywhere.
That's the thing. He was. So he was.
He's got the freedom to do just about anything.
He turned into
a
defenseman. Yeah, I mean, I think the only time you really see that is when you just had this play out on their schedule. They played Ottawa twice in 11 days, and so you lost to them in overtime at their place. I think Monday kind of felt like, hey, we owe them one when they beat the Sens 5-2. I think when you play Detroit on Saturday here and you lose and you turn around and play them again on Tuesday at their place, there may be a, hey, we owe them one. But you're right. Over an 82-game season, I don't think you get that. I just think – these seasons are so long, and you just – it's impossible to build up animosity like that, because you just – you move on, you're city to city. Just things play out in the course of a season, and you're not going to remember anything back in October. October probably feels like 6 months ago, right? I mean, so – no, I don't really think that plays out in an NHL schedule. But this San Jose team – but here's one thing that Nate didn't bring up. If you're looking for inspiration for the Predators, they're going to have plenty of inspiration, because we all know how those players in that room feel about Pekka, and he's going for career number 300 when it comes to wins tonight. And they're going to be inspired. I mean, they're going to want to – now, does that mean anything if they lose, he doesn't get 300 tonight? No, because the next start he'll have a crack of 300, which will probably be Sunday against the Blues. But I think they'd like to knock that out tonight against a good opponent. I mean, they'd like to get him 300. It means a lot to him. It means a lot to them to do that for him. So I expect them to play well and to to kind of use that as a little extra motivation for tonight's game.
I do think when you play 82 games, you know, the best teams are the ones that are focused every night consistently without having to get that motivational speech. But if you can find something like that to give you a little extra edge, I think it's good. Hey, let's do this. Let's do this for Pekka. He has such immense respect in the locker room, as we know. So when there's a milestone, I don't doubt that they'll try to use that for a little extra juice.
Willie, 38 years ago today, we heard this.
So 5 seconds left in the game. Do you believe in miracles? Yes! Unbelievable.
38 years ago, Al Michaels.
Wow.
Do you believe in miracles? Yes.
That was one of the first tweets that I saw this morning in light of, because I'll be honest, I fell asleep. Darren, you got to cut me some slack because I watched from the beginning. I watched a lot of good college hoops last night. Then at 10 o'clock, I watched the first couple periods of USA versus Canada in that women's gold medal game. But during the third period, I zonked out.
I didn't make it either.
I didn't make it.
I mean, I got up this morning.
We had the back-to-backs. We had plane flights both nights. And I was just like, I got to go to sleep.
Yeah,
and so I woke up and I was like, well, I knew it went to, because at one point I was in a haze and I woke up and I saw it was tied and it was an overtime and I still didn't make it. Woke up, checked my phone, USA wins. And one of the first things I saw was Pete Weber, 38 years old today. It was Jim Craig. And how about that for a great historical parallel there? Because that was a heck of a hockey game.
Kathy Morgan on Twitter says the Cow Palace was an intimidating arena.
Intimidating.
It was intimidating. It was named for rodeo livestock shows.
Sorry, that's Julian just explained.
She said she lived there for 20 years.
Nice. So she's been there.
Yeah. She said, man, you didn't go into the Cow Palace and push San Jose
around. No one comes into the Cow Palace.
We'll come back.
It pushes us around.
Talk a little college hoops with Iman Brennan. Good discussion. You're going to want to hear this next on 102.5 The Game.